Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report here on this Monday. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In the show today, Taylor Charleston will be talking about the most up-to-date variety and rootstock information for almond plantings in the North Sacramento Valley. And I'll have a check-in of regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission. Supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
According to the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, California's non-Valencia oranges is forecasted at 40,000 boxes for the month of July. Valencia oranges are forecasted at 9,000 boxes for July, and all oranges in California are forecasted at 49,000 boxes. The Almond Board of California staff recently attended the Agriculture Transportation Coalition annual conference in Tacoma that focused on ongoing transportation disruptions and touched on many aspects of the logistics crisis. Numerous discussions focused on how and when things may begin to improve. The consensus among those presenting was that things will continue to improve throughout the calendar year, with something like a return to normalcy being realized in 2023. Carrier rates, however, are expected to continue to be significantly higher than their historical average. While things continue to improve, there was also much discussion regarding the Ocean Shipping Reform Act, which was recently signed into law. While formulation of exact regulations for carriers will be ongoing through the year, many of the law's provisions immediately went into effect, including those requiring carriers to provide justification for detention and fees, as well as the provision barring carriers from unreasonably declining cargo bookings. Supplies of limes are steady and ample enough to meet the demand. There's enough to supply where it's not doing any detriment to a price point or to the market, and it's pretty much the same volume as previous years, according to Jason Stross of Santa's Produce. Currently, Santa's is pulling limes from four locations in Mexico. As for quality and sizing, Stross says shippers can find pretty much almost anything out there. To generate a premium product, you have to put in the effort in terms of repacking, he says. The quality that's originally being put in a box is great. And then once it arrives in the U.S., they still do a run on the fruit to get the quality fruit that generates the highest dollar in the market. He adds that the product of the tree is good with consistent sizing and color. Meanwhile, demand for limes is also steady. It seems like everyone wants a larger size on demand. Oftentimes, you have to have someone who wants to take your 175s and 150s, and you have to use that to help move your 230s and 250s. It all balances itself out, he said. As for pricing, Stroh says it's where it needs to be. You don't want it to be at a $30 premium if you can maintain the lesser than $20 price. He says it's the safest route to go, noting that the higher lime market, such as a $60 market, comes with the expectation of high-quality limes. He said if it's not a perfect lime, that's a risk. The pricing also has to come down from just a few months ago when prices spiked in the marketplace. Pricing did what they all hoped it would do, and that is to get back to a settling point, which is where we're at right now. Looking ahead, Stroh hopes for more of the same movement until just before school starts back up, which tends to change consumer buying habits again. So rather than buying in bulk or more sporadic buying in the summer, restaurants will slow a bit and more retail will be driven again. EnWave Corporation has announced that it has signed an equipment purchase agreement with Dole Worldwide Food and Beverage Group, a division of Dole Asia Holdings, to supply a 120-watt radiant energy vacuum dehydration processing line that will materially increase Dole's vacuum microwave processing capabilities. EnWave and Dole previously announced plans for a global strategic partnership in August of 2021 with the intent of jointly developing innovative nutrition solutions using fruits and vegetables. Dole believes access to good nutrition should be like sunshine, available, affordable, and accessible to all. Partnering with EnWave allows for collaboration to develop fruit and vegetable snack and ingredient innovations together. EnWave's REV technology provides a gentle, rapid drying solution that allows for the production of innovative, nutritious, and convenient food applications while partnering with Dole in achieving its company purpose. The strategic partnership with Dole will leverage the company's industry-leading brand along EnWave's patented dehydration technology to bring better-for-you snack options to its global customer base as part of Dole's Sunshine for All commitment. Both companies are intent on growing this partnership. Pace International, a leading provider of sustainable post-harvest solutions and technologies for the fresh produce industry, has announced that BioSpectra 100SC is now listed by the Organic Materials Review Institute for organic use in the U.S. The announcement comes 6 years after the introduction of the product, when the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the California Department of Pesticide Regulation approved the product for post-harvest applications. BioSpectra received its OMRI listed seal after completing the rigorous certification process and requirements set forth for the organic crop production use. BioSpectra is the latest biorational fungicide to be organically certified for post-harvest applications. It provides a broad-spectrum decay control against several major fungal post-harvest diseases across various crops and has shown better disease control compared to other organic alternatives. This highly effective natural decay control agent has received an exemption from tolerance for current agriculture applications in the U.S., and it has shown no resistance development over the past decades of use in food.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Almond plantings in the northern Sacramento Valley continue to grow, but with these plantings comes the decision of variety and rootstock selection for a given orchard. Compared to making the same decision in the San Joaquin Valley, considerations will be vastly different, according to UCCE Orchard Advisor Luke Milliron.
Just a massively different game in the Sacramento Valley than in the San Joaquin Valley, really because of rain and precipitation and that potential or risk for flooding and the fact that we tend to have heavier soils, more clay in our soils than they do down south. And so that informs both varieties and rootstocks. So with rootstocks, you know, anchorage is really, really important, where that wouldn't be so important down south. And so that's why Crimsk 86 has become the most popular almond rootstock in the Sac Valley. And then in terms of varieties, at least historically, we'll see if that changes with so much interest in self-fertile varieties. But we tend to plant more pollinizers when we plant nonpareil than they do down south, because there's so little weather at bloom in the San Joaquin Valley. Often you can get away with just one pollinizer, whereas in the Sac Valley, people plant two or even three pollinizers.
Of course, when choosing a variety or rootstock for any tree, let alone an almond tree, there's always an associated risk. And Milliron likes to echo this notion when he's talking to growers in the valley.
The nursery industry is coming out with new stuff all the time, and growers themselves are obviously trying to push the envelope as well to have a more profitable planting. But that can also get you into some real troubles. They're certainly seen in the Sacramento Valley where untested combinations of rootstocks and varieties, like Independence, not doing well when planted on Crimsk 86, have been problematic. So making sure that whatever you're planting, you know, has been really thoroughly evaluated. Ideally, you know, it does take 20 years or so to prove a rootstock or to prove a variety. And folks are you know, often incentivized to try to push the envelope, but there's nothing harder than planting something and it not working out. So I like to, you know, my advice is kind of to start with what has worked best for you in the past and at least start there as your idea of what to plant next.
Because of this, one might deduce that there's a higher associated risk with making variety and rootstock selections in the Northern Sac Valley as opposed to the San Joaquin Valley. Milliron said there might be some validity to this.
We often plant rootstocks in the Sacramento Valley that have some plum in the genetics. Of course, historically, we planted a lot of Mariana rooted trees in the Sacramento Valley. And that is 100% plum. And then more recently planting Crimscady 6, which is part plum. So there, you know, that's with plum in the genetics of the rootstock, that is often when we can get into some problems with partial or complete incompatibility with some varieties on top. And so you want to make sure that whatever combination you're planting, if plum is in the rootstock, that it has been evaluated and it definitely looks like a good compatible pairing. And you have trees that you can visit that have been in the ground for a long time. Versus, you know, in the San Joaquin Valley, peach almond hybrids are much more common, and I, you know, haven't really heard of issues with compatibility there.
With Crimsk 86 being popular in the Northern Sac Valley, if you're considering doing new planting, Milliron recommends
do a nematode test before you plant any orchard. And if you have root knot nematode, this is not the rootstock for you. And it's also very, very salt sensitive. So that's definitely a concern amidst drought and poor water quality.
Additionally, as far as the cell fertiles are concerned,
they crop really early, which you would think is a wonderful thing. But what I've been seeing is that can really drag the limbs down, and it can reduce a lot of vegetative growth in those first few years when you want good upright structure of the limbs, and you obviously want just maximum vegetative growth because you're trying to establish a nice big canopy that is strong and can support the crop. So whether there's, you know, future sprays, we can spray the trees to knock off the crop and not have it be interfering when the trees are just one or two or, you know, maybe even 3 years old, but definitely when they're one and two, that would be a really important tool for some of these self-fertiles that crop so early, and that can actually be a problem.
To hear more about this type of information and other specialty crops in the Sacramento Valley, visit the Growing the Valley podcast, which Milliron co-hosts with UCCE Farm Advisor Phoebe Gordon. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai has announced the launch of the United States-Kenya Strategic Trade and Investment Partnership. Tai met virtually with representatives from Kenya, and they identified initial issues where the United States and Kenya will develop an ambitious roadmap for enhanced cooperation. The United States and Kenya will consider measures to facilitate agricultural trade and enhance transparency and understanding of the application of science and risk-based sanitary and phytosanitary measures. The two sides share an interest in fostering sustainable agricultural practices, as well as creating an enabling environment for innovative agricultural technologies that would help achieve food security goals, increase farm productivity, and improve farmer livelihoods while addressing climate change concerns. Meanwhile, USTR and the European Union held the fifth meeting of the joint committee established under the US-EU Agreement on Prudential Measures regarding Insurance and Reinsurance. Both sides acknowledged progress made towards full implementation of the agreement. Republican lawmakers demand the Biden administration waive import duties on fertilizer from Morocco and Trinidad and Tobago. The Biden administration has placed duties on fertilizer imports of phosphate fertilizer products from Morocco and is working on new duties on urea ammonium nitrate fertilizer from Trinidad and Tobago. Led by Senator Roger Marshall and Representative Tracy Mann of Kansas, a group of Republicans made the demand in a letter to President Biden. The letter states the bottom line is that fertilizer is critical to national security and national defense. In June, President Biden, using his emergency authority, issued a proclamation titled Declaration of Emergency on Authorization for Temporary Extensions of Time and Duty-Free Importation of Solar Cells and Modules from Southeast Asia. The decision waived countervailing duties and anti-dumping duties for solar panels. President Biden's emergency justifications for this proclamation are also applicable to fertilizer, according to the letter, which directly impacts food prices more than any emergency concerning solar panels. One expert says higher interest rates may help slow down the rapid rise in retail food prices. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the story.
Grocery shoppers are seeing the highest rate of food price inflation since 1979 or so, with grocery store foods averaging 12% higher than this time last year. USDA economist Matt McLaughlin says there could be at least some light at the end of this food inflation tunnel in the form of interest rate hikes already announced by the Federal Reserve and hikes to come. McLaughlin says higher interest rates reduce the money supply and reduce demand, and so
we would expect that interest rates would bring prices down,
or at least slow those price increases down. However, he says one factor that puts upward price pressure on almost every food is rising energy prices. They're already running up to 60% higher than a year ago. And so
when we see increases in energy prices, even if we do have decreases in overall money supply, maybe some of these other costs are coming down. If we have an increasing energy costs, we will expect increases in food prices.
But he does not expect to see next month the kind of price hikes we saw this past month. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The Agriculture Industry Electronics Foundation has announced the formation of a project team to develop the new agriculture interoperability network. The team will be creating guidelines for data formats to simplify data for end users, growers, and operators. The project team is made up of approximately 60 participants from various AEF member companies from different corners of the globe. AEF members will be able to use the network to make sure their data flows through this whole network. AEF Vice Chairman Andrew Oliver says the ability to manage a farm more effectively revolves around the ease of getting all of the data into the best location for reporting and analysis and to derive insights for future operations. The network will be a concerted and non-discriminatory governed network that streamlines peer-to-peer interfaces between platforms. Agricultural Industry Electronics Foundation is scheduled to introduce the network in November of 2023. The National Milk Producers Federation is taking an active role to promote affordable and nutritious foods in the Biden administration's upcoming hunger conference. The Federation recently led 11 national agricultural anti-hunger nutrition and medical groups in a virtual listening session. The goal was to inspire the administration to place a high priority on access to affordable, diverse, and nutritious foods at the conference. Claudia Larson, National Milk Senior Director of Government Relations, says the listening session was a joint effort to shine a spotlight on nutrition.
We, as the industry, but also partnering with different nutrition organizations across the country, are looking to increase consumption of nutrient-dense food like dairy, like eggs, like the fresh fruits and vegetables.
A wide range of interest groups took part in the session, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, Feeding America, and the International Fresh Produce Association. Larson says the session was an effort to showcase affordable, nutritious foods for the White House.
There are lots of things that we know the White House is considering when it comes to drafting the strategy for the nation to address nutrition insecurity and diet-related diseases. And we want to make sure that increasing real access and increasing real choice is prioritized in that strategy.
The National Milk Producers Federation said the listening session was aimed at influencing the White House's effort to not only end hunger, but also increase healthy eating and physical activity. The White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health takes place in September.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Guardian Agriculture is the developer of the first fully autonomous crop protection aircraft system. They're working to bring positive change to the agriculture industry through this innovative technology. Jeff Sparks, COO of Guardian Ag, tells us more about the company and why they've created this aircraft system.
The company was founded in 2018. We have been, taking a step back, we were a team of roboticists and technologists who also had some background in aviation, saw what was happening with kind of the explosion of drones in Asia in crops, wanted to make a positive impact in the world. They're a great way of reducing emissions, having controlled kind of precision application, potentially reducing chemical use, but realized that that sort of benefit, or to bring that sort of benefit to the US, you really needed a different scale. That those types of systems were competing with backpack sprayers or replacing backpack sprayers, which was great when you have a 4-acre field. But when you're talking about the Americas, you're talking about hundreds, thousands of acres. You are talking about systems that need to compete effectively with aircraft and tractors. And so you needed a very different scale. So we set out to build what's considered in the industry eVTOL, electric vertical takeoff and landing. And you'll see a lot of people have done that, like Joby Aviation and Archer and others in the passenger world. But it made much more sense to us in terms of an actual impact to start an ag, because it's a place where you can actually get on the field quite literally and not just be, as Adam, our CEO, says, a toy for rich people. It's a thing that will do real work and kind of reduce emissions, potentially reduce chemicals, and really help farmers' bottom lines. So we started building kind of that scale of system. We got backing from Bayer, from FMC, from Wilbur Ellis, from others, sent a second generation out into the field, did trials in Idaho, in Florida on specialty crops, took that learning back, and are now building our third generation system. This is going to be the first one we'll release commercially, really targeted at specialty crops throughout the West Coast, primarily California, but also Oregon and Washington, as well as places in Florida and Texas and others where specialty crops are grown.
The fully electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft system can deliver precise application of crop protection and provides a host of benefits to producers.
Trading by air has a lot of different benefits. So it's sort of a Swiss Army knife of crop protection. You can use it in, regardless of ground conditions. Potentially, you can even use it at night. These systems are effectively daylight blind. You can use it when there are irrigation pipes on the ground. You can use it if the ground is too wet. You can use it to treat lots of different crop types. You don't need special systems to use it, whether it's on something like a kale or, a set of almond trees. Those both work with our system. It doesn't cause disease spread. You can have a lot of precision. Go out into the field to do spot treatments. You can, if you want to do a full field application, you can. It has all of these sort of benefits to it, but traditionally it's really been supply limited. You needed a helicopter pilot, maybe a plane pilot to come in. It was hard to get. It wasn't something a grower themselves could own. And what we wanted to do was open that up to growers so they could kind of control their destiny and own these systems themselves. So there are a ton of benefits beyond that in terms of the growers for operation. Like, these systems have like 80% less operating expense than a helicopter. There are really 5 moving parts on it. You can control everything from its precision in the air to its height over the canopy. You can control how much downwash you get if you want a lot of vegetation in the crop when you're applying kind of, let's say, a late season fungicide versus applying that herbicide. You can change all of these different metrics to get exactly what you want. And then you can do that over and over again precisely. So you don't need to have the best person and the best pilot in the world, because that gets abstracted to the software. So, you know, there are all of these different benefits kind of add up to give growers a really important tool they can use to maximize their yield and do so cost effectively.
Guardian Ag put a lot of time and effort into building an effective aircraft system. Sparks brings us more details about the creation process and the challenges they faced.
You know, to build a system of this scale, one of the things that we looked at what was happening in the drone market in Asia and looked at whether these parts could be effectively used. And it turns out the answer is no. Those type of systems tend to max out at payloads around 100, 150 pounds, and then they just become unreliable. We really had to start from the ground up to start using aircraft-grade components. We built our own, there's a regulatory question, so we built our own flight termination system with highly redundant links and, you know, onboard safety systems as well as ground-based safety systems. We actually have built our own batteries from the ground up, because it turns out in aerial application, it's a very different problem than transporting people or, say, taking pictures. It's not just about how long can it fly or how many minutes it can stay in the air. It's really about acres per hour. And when you do that, there's trade-offs between your boom width and your flight speed and your ferry time and your logistics between site. Because, you know, even when someone says they have 1,000 acres, that's spread over dozens of 40 to 100 acre plots. So all these things, how do you refill, how do you recharge, kind of go into those calculations. And we've been working, as I said, with farmers for the last 4 years, including very deeply with Wilbur Ellis, to really optimize all of those different factors. And that goes into the engineering itself. It goes into the battery design, it goes into the way the spray boom is designed, which really is mimicking what's done today. It goes into the safety systems and how do you land on a trailer? How do you maximize that efficiency on the ground so you're back in the air very quickly? It's actually a very different beast than most other forms of aircraft.
Guardian Agriculture's goal is to make aerial application available to all producers. By creating high-value partnerships and a thorough research and development process, they strive to give all producers access to this technology.
When we start out, it's important to us to have a very tight kind of R&D cycle in our development. We want to make sure that we work with the best in the industry to make a product that's going to work and work at scale. And Wilbur has the largest aerial application fleet in California. So they were the ideal partner for us. Our goal as a company is that we believe every farmer should own aerial application capability, and will want to. So we're starting our work with Wilbur. I think our initial, they will likely take up all of our initial production capacity, but we are definitely looking for individual farmers to partner with and to start deploying these at scale in the field.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.